Hello, this is Debbie. On Wednesday, September 23rd, autumnal equinox. Wonderful day, 2015. It is the Herald Review.com reading. Today, we start with a headline that says, Garbage Fumes Spark Meth Arrest. This is by Tony Reed for the is a staff reader for the paper, staff writer for the paper. Decatur. Smoking garbage bags helped Decatur police home in on a man they accuse of operating a lab for manufacturing methamphetamine. Cameron L. Maxey, 30, was arrested Monday evening and booked on a charge of aggravated unlawful participation in meth manufacturing. He denied running a meth lab, but allegedly told police he was a meth user. Officers had swooped on his home in the 1200 block of East Olive Street on Monday afternoon after being alerted by a neighbor to a smoking trash can. Sworn police statements allege a garbage bag was found to contain a cooker used for making meth and, quote, a gas generator that was smoking and emitting fumes. Some hours later, police said they found a second smoking garbage bag nearby, and this one was stuffed with two gas generators, battery wrappers, lighter fluid, and other garbage associated with meth production. Officer Lonnie Llewellyn said in his statement that police confronted Maxey and contacted probation officers because Maxey's on probation for a previous conviction for manufacturing meth. Probation officers observed what appeared to be meth manufacturing items inside the residence and alerted detectives to those items, Llewellyn said. An Illinois State Police meth response team was called in to help deal with the evidence and dispose of dangerous waste items. Under questioning, Maxey said he had not cooked meth himself, but he'd only thrown out garbage left by others who had manufactured the illegal drug. He remained in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday night in lieu of posting $250,000 bond. He is due in courts September 29th. End of that article. Next article. Rauner holds off on 100 layoffs, says the headline, over a big picture of the governor. Springfield. Governor Bruce Rauner is backing off plans to lay off more than 100 state workers next week as part of the lingering budget standoff. In agreement with two labor unions representing the workers, the administration said it was waiting for the matter to work its way through the court system before deciding the next step. Quote, the administration believes legal proceedings will confirm that the agencies have properly followed the law in executing these layoffs. We hope to reach a final resolution very soon, Rauner's spokesman Catherine Kelly said. Rauner had planned to jettison the workers September 30th after he and Democrats, who control the legislature, were unable to agree on a spending plan for the fiscal year that began July 1st. Included in the mix were conservation police officers and workers at the Illinois State Museum. It was not clear Tuesday whether the museum or the World Shooting Complex in Sparta are still on track to close September 30th. The Hardin County prison work camp targeted by Rauner is not set to be closed until December. Anders Lindell, a spokesman for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, cautioned the reprieve for threatened workers may only be temporary. The ultimate answer is for the governor to drop his political posturing and work with the legislator, Lindahl said. The delay comes as a budget impasse is in its 12th week. After Rauner announced the layoffs, the unions took him to court, saying the state was violating terms of the contracts. That is the end of the article. Next, under health care, more room to serve at Crossing Healthcare. This is by Emily Steele for the Herald and Review. Decatur. For more than a week, Crossing Healthcare has been welcoming and directing patients around its new building. But on Tuesday, the community had a chance to celebrate the $6 million facility that doubles access to health care for Macon County's low-income residents. A large crowd gathered for the grand opening and ribbon-cutting ceremony outside the new home of Crossing Healthcare, formerly CHIC, at 320 East Central Avenue. Area politicians, healthcare providers, and community members came to see the state-of-the-art facility in person and tour the Schrodt Community Health Center. A lot of people don't get credit for helping us, but in one way or another, everyone who was here helped, said Dr. Joseph Schrodt, the building's namesake. Inside, the center opens up onto a large centralized lobby with a playroom and plenty of seating. Patients receive a pager that buzzes when their exam room is ready to ensure their privacy. Doors lead into each of the prenatal, pediatric, and adult wings, which are color-coded. Nurse practitioner Angela King greeted visitors outside her three pediatric exam rooms equipped with televisions playing children's show and decorated with superheroes and Sesame Street posters. It was overwhelming, she said, about the new unit. At the other building, we shared space. She said feedback has been good from children and their parents. When you come to a place that's so put together, it makes them feel good about coming here, King said. The expanded healthcare already has several new providers. Still to come are X-ray capabilities and a built-in telepharmacy scheduled to open in mid-October. The Community Health Center was established in 1972 to provide outpatient care for residents with incomes below 200% of federal poverty guidelines. Well, Crossing serves 14,000 patients, an estimated 32,000 residents are eligible for services. In 2013, the governing board, chaired by Schrodt, recognized its clinic at 2905 North Main Street was no longer large enough for their needs. The board began working with city and state leaders to plan and fund a new health center in the central Wabash Crossing area just north of downtown. The board broke ground on 3 acres of vacant city lots in December. Executive Director Tanya Andrick said despite informing patients of the move, she was nervous when it opened. The very first day we registered 12 people. On the very first day we registered 112 people, Andrick said. That day she stood out in the lobby and watched patients as they came in for the first time. The looks on their faces, surprise and joy, Andrick said, adding many thanks staff. Half of the funding came from the state's Illinois Jobs Now program, and the remaining $3 million was covered with loans, donations, and operating revenues. But with no state budget in place, Andrick said Crossing Healthcare is carrying the full debt load to finish the building. An open house is also planned for 1 to 5 p.m. Wednesday, October 7th. End of article. Treasure wants MAP grant funds saved. That's all caps. It's an acronym. M-A-P, MAP funds. Picture of the state treasurer. Illinois Treasurer Michael Frerich speaks with Eastern Illinois University student Jose Durbin about supporting a resolution to fund monetary award program grants. So that must be MAP, monetary award program grants. This is by Gerard Jarman for the Lee News Service. Charleston, Illinois Treasurer Michael Frerich visited Eastern Illinois University to urge the approval of a measure that would approve funds for tuition assistance. Frerich has toured state universities to gain support for the approval of Senate Bill 2043. The bill has been approved by the Senate. House consideration is expected this month. The bill would appropriate $373 million, the same amount Governor Bruce Rauner initially proposed, according to a news release. Because the budget impasse in Springfield, MAP grants have not interrupted. That's not the right word. Because of the budget impasse, MAP grants have not been put forth, heaving uncertainty on many students. It's frustrating to get to your senior year and potentially not receive the money you were already promised, she said. Frerich said unlike many state entities that have been funded by either the governor or by court rulings such as Medicaid, MAP grants have not had the lobbying support others have had and therefore has not received as much attention by the General Assembly and the governor. Josh Bullock, Lakeland College president, said MAP grants are an incentive as well as an assistance. He said Illinois is continually losing large numbers of high school graduates. Illinois loses more high school graduates to other state universities than any other state in the country except New Jersey, Bullock said. We lose about 70,000 graduates every year that begin their college education in a different state. Frerich said the students who can be retained are future residents who will be paying for state government. Without this financial assistance, state universities had to float the money to students. Frerich said this will not be feasible for long, though. Without state appropriations to colleges and universities, students may not be floated into next semester. I'm not sure how next spring will go, Turner said. Bullock said discussions are being held as how long colleges can support their financial aid students. They were told you go to school, you get good grades, you've qualified for one of these grants, Frerich said. Then they've showed up on campus, have been told there's a pending bill, that the money didn't follow them. Frerich said there's a distinct possibility the bill will be passed and the MAP grants funded. End of article. Next, school board passes hopeful budget, says the headline. This is by Valerie Wells for the Herald and Review. Decatur. The budget news at the Decatur School Board meeting on Tuesday was cautiously optimistic. Todd Kovalt, chief operational officer, told the board that the tentative budget was prepared with no information on what the general state aid level would be, and that had to be estimated. He learned shortly before the board meeting the district is slated to receive $2.9 million more than he anticipated, although that amount is not guaranteed. I want to remind you that the General Assembly has still not finalized a budget, he said. The tentative district budget had a $4.6 million deficit, which is now reduced to $1.6 million if the state does approve the generous state aid amount, and if it's paid in full. In the past several years, the state reduced the amount actually paid. The board approved the final budget as required by state law, even when the General Assembly has not yet adopted a state budget. In other business, the board approved a change in health coverage for district employees. The current health plan has a $350 deductible and a $1,850 out-of-pocket expense, and Kovalt said only 41% of participants met the deductible and fewer than 10% met the out-of-pocket maximum during the year. The new plan has a $500 deductible and a $2,500 maximum out-of-pocket expense and was agreed to by a committee that includes representatives from employee unions. The combined savings to the district will amount to $537,000. If more than half the employees participate in the wellness fair scheduled to meet next week, the district will receive a reimbursement of 0.5% of the premium, which is approximately $75,000. There was a brief discussion at the end of the meeting on changes to the high school uniform policy that allows flip-flops. Board members expressed concern about safety issues, particularly related to the stairs at the high schools, and Superintendent Lisa Taylor said the changes were made to simplify dress code rules and make them enforceable. There was discussion on what constitutes the flip-flop, she said, citing that the fact that many women's shoes are backless and, while appropriate and professional-looking, could theoretically be classified as flip-flops. And rather than waste time and effort on student footwear, the decision was made to focus on more important matters. End of the article. Next, Herald and Review staff report, fatal crash victim identified. Long Creek, the driver of a vehicle who was fatally injured in a crash with a semi-tractor trailer Tuesday morning was Caroline E. Williams, 90, of Decatur. At about 7:42, the victim was exiting a convenience store parking lot, apparently trying to cross the eastbound lane to travel west on U.S. 36, when her vehicle was struck by an eastbound truck, said a release by the Macon County Coroner, Michael E. Day. Williams suffered a severe head injury. She was pronounced dead at the scene, 9:16 a.m. The truck driver was transported to a hospital to be assessed. The accident is being investigated by the Illinois State Police. Then this morning, the fatal crash causes long delays near Salem School Road. Illinois State Long Creek. Illinois State Police troopers responded to a crash today with a reported fatal injury on U.S. 36 near Salem School Road. The crash involves a semi-tractor trailer and a passenger automobile. The accident had caused a complete shutdown of traffic at Salem School Road and the railroad tracks north of U.S. 36. Expect extended delays while crash is being reconstructed by the state police. Motorists should use an alternative route till noon, according to the news release. I guess that's the front story that came out first. Suspect who caused school lockdown held, says the headline. Huey Freeman from the paper, Decatur. Clifford Darrell Jr., 51, who was arrested after he ran from police toward Warrensburg-Latham Grade School, causing a school lockdown, was arraigned Tuesday on a felony charge of aggravated resisting a police officer. At about 10 o'clock Tuesday, September 15th, Warrensburg police were notified of a suspicious male walking near the school complex in the roadway instead of the sidewalk. When Police Chief Greg Wheeler arrived, he saw the man carrying a black bag. He asked the man what he was doing, and he said he was just dropped off, said a probable cause affidavit by Wheeler. When Wheeler asked him for identification, he said he did not have an ID and walked away. When the police chief asked him his name, he ran away. A short time later, the man was spotted on school property. When he saw the police car approach, he began running in the direction of the door leading into the school, Wheeler wrote in a statement. By this time, Wheeler had called in to dispatchers to lock down the schools. As Wheeler chased the man, yelling, "Police stop," he ran alongside the middle school, then toward the school administrative offices and bus garage. When he disappeared into the woods near the railroad tracks, a Decatur Police K-9 unit was called in. As the officer and his dog tracked him in the vicinity, the man emerged from the woods, running toward Illinois 121. He ignored police orders to stop running and was tackled by Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Shane Cole and Lieutenant John Butts. Police found a broken glass pipe with cocaine residue in the man's backpack. During the scuffle, Butts sustained injury, including abrasions to his left wrist and right hand. Darrell was identified by a state-issued photo ID card and a booking photo from Richland County, where he was arrested in July. He has a pending case there in which he was charged with aggravated assault, deadly weapon, possession of drug paraphernalia, and disorderly contact. Darrell, who has listed a home address in Salem, Oregon, is in a court document, is being held in the Macon County Jail on a $30,000 bond, pending his preliminary hearing in circuit court October 7th. End of article. Neitzel named mayor of Lincoln until 2017. Lincoln. Marty Neitzel will serve as Lincoln's mayor until the March 2017 election. Neitzel, an alderwoman from Ward 4, was appointed to the seat Monday night by the city council and will serve out the term of former Mayor Keith Snyder, which ends April 30th, 2017. Neitzel has served as a mayor pro tem since the death of Scott Cooper on August 14th. Cooper replaced Snyder, who resigned to accept a seat on the Illinois Labor Relations Board in March. Neitzel, a lifelong resident of Lincoln, has served on the Lincoln City Council as alderwoman since November 2002. Neitzel graduated from Lincoln Community High School and later worked as a bookkeeping accountant and claims adjuster for Economy Insurance Company. Prior to her retirement in 1999, she was named Illinois Woman Adjuster of the Year. A search for her Ward 4 replacement will begin. End of the article. A headline you don't see too often: Locked In Black focused on billiard success. Just don't see billiards headlines very much. My editorial comment, excuse me. Picture of Serena Black, 17, of Warrensburg, lines up a shot while practicing at Starship Billiards. Black has big plans for a career in billiards. Decatur, Serena Black has it all planned out. "I'm going to Lindenwood University, earn my degree in billiards and English." Black stopped and laughed. "I meant business in English." Black may not be majoring in billiards, but she has no question her life will always revolve around the sport. Black, a senior at Warrensburg Latham, played softball in junior high. She practiced it constantly, studied it tirelessly, and looked forward to being on the mound whenever she could. Then her grandma Black bought Serena's family a pool table as a housewarming gift. Now Black is an American Pool Players Association junior champion. She plays in leagues every Monday and Tuesday, works with a trainer, David Carr, 3 hours every Wednesday, and has relationships with several professional players, including U.S. Professional Player Association No. 1 ranked Shane Van Boining. I don't know who I would be today if I hadn't found this sport. It's part of who I am now, Black said. I have made so many new friends and have so many opportunities come my way. I never expected myself to become this involved in the billiards community. Black's father, Robert, is a longtime competitive pool player who played at an American Pool Players Association event in Las Vegas in 2008. The pool table his mom purchased was the perfect gift. When the table arrived at her home, Serena said she'd only played pool a few times in her life. I couldn't even hold a cue properly, she said. Her dad was hesitant to let her play on it, but Serena was persistent. At first, I wasn't allowed to play because it's expensive, and my dad didn't want me tearing it up, Serena said, but I was intrigued. I was sneaking in there at night after he'd go to bed and quietly trying to play. Soon, Robert relented. He was both surprised and pleased at what happened next. I could tell right away she was comprehending the game, and she was going to get interested in it, Robert said, and you could tell right when she started competing she was going to do pretty well. She can beat me now. I'd say we're pretty even. The way she handles herself, the way she goes right at people in tournaments I know of and have beaten me, I'm very proud of her. A few months after the pool table arrived at the Blacks' home, Serena was playing in a junior pool league at Starship Billiards in Decatur. With the help of Robert, who was familiar with the competitive pool scene, Serena was playing in the junior nationals in Davenport, Iowa. Within the year, she placed third in a field that included both boys and girls. 2 years later, she won her division. I started shooting competitively because I was jealous of the way my dad shot and was tired of getting beat, Serena said. I'd always been really competitive, and pool sparked it even more. Didn't take Serena long to figure out there wasn't room for her life for softball and pool. When I started having the urge to be at the pool often more than going out and pitching a softball, I knew what I had to do, Serena said. I'd be at a softball tournament, and it would irritate me because I'm thinking, what I wouldn't be give to be at the table right now. My dad was a little worried at first when I quit softball. It had been my main thing since elementary school, the one sport I actually took seriously. I think it scared him a little bit when I told him I was ready to move on. He told me he would support my decision as long as he knew I was giving 100%. That's not a problem for Serena. She describes herself as a nerd and proud of it. She's definitely not the average high school kid. Her focus is intense. Black admitted it's not easy being a 17-year-old girl in a world of older men playing in bars. She works hard to break the stereotypes that go along with pool. Most people associate pool with being in a bar constantly and drinking alcohol, Serena said. The professional side of the sport has so much more than that, and people don't realize it. I want to uplift the reputation of the sport as much as possible. Being avid in billiards earned me an undeserved reputation at school, associating me with a negative side and thinking I was drinking in bars and things like that. None of that is even close to true. Serena made a Facebook post about her reputation struggles, and because of her friendships in the professional pool, it went viral. It went viral. It caught the attention of Finnish pro Mike Immonen, who put Serena in contact with sponsors. Serena is now sponsored by Mez Q's Grind and Clothing Company and Kamui Chalk. Serena said her long-term goals are to run a pool hall franchise, train junior players, and continue to write for billiards magazines. But she's not ruling out a professional career. It'd be very intimidating for me, but it would be an amazing experience, Serena said. If I had the opportunity, I'd grasp it with both hands. End of the article. In state and regional news, college leaders' buyouts capped by legislation. Springfield. This is by Kurt Erickson, the Springfield Bureau Chief for Herald and Review. Governor Bruce Rauner signed legislation Tuesday targeting golden parachutes given to community college presidents. The new law, which goes into effect immediately, was triggered by the outrage over a six-figure buyout deal given to embattled College of DuPage President Robert Bruder. The measure bars the trustees of community colleges from approving similar deals for departing executives. It would prohibit any agreement that costs more than 1 year's salary and limits contracts for presidents to 4 years. Law also requires colleges to notify the public of any pending contract changes. State Representative Gene Ives, Republican Wheaton said Reuters' $763,000 buyout offer from College of DuPage trustees, which has since been voided, was irresponsible and disrespectful to taxpayers. Well, the new board seems to be acting more in line with the best interests of the college's stakeholders. This new law will prevent mismanagement at the levels we've seen at COD from happening in the future, I've said. State Senator Tom Cullerton, Democrat, Phillip Park, praised the new law, but said more work remains to rein in high administrative costs at all levels of higher ed. This is a step in the right direction. However, there still needs to be additional protections in place to shed some sunshine on the use of state funds at public higher education institutions, Cullerton said. Recent events at the University of Illinois have shown the obvious need for common sense reform to guarantee taxpayer dollars are spent wisely. At U of I, former Chancellor Phyllis Wise resigned this summer after it was revealed she used personal email accounts to discuss university business. She'll return to her job as a biology professor earning $300,000 annually. At Illinois State University, former President Timothy Flanagan received a $480,000 buyout in 2014 after serving in the top post for less than a year. He had left the university after he was embroiled in an altercation with a university groundskeeper. The legislation is House Bill 3593. End of that article. And to close, Section 2 is a short article on antique fire trucks stored for years displayed in Tolono. And then this will close our Wednesday, September 23rd, 2015, part one of the Herald and Review. Tolono, AP. An antique fire truck, once used in Tolono, is back on display after 13 years hidden in obscurity and uncertainty. Denny Davis is a 40-year-old Tolono volunteer firefighter who bought the Red Classic and placed it on property he owns in the town 150 miles south of Chicago. The truck was playground equipment in Champaign's Hessel Park for nearly four decades. Liability concerns forced its removal in 2002. Tolono firefighters took it, but insurance worries scrapped their display plan. It sat in storage, was almost sold for scrap, and finally auctioned to high bidder Davis. Davis was pleased it served as seating for viewing fireworks during a summer town festival. He intends improvements to make it a photo stop. End of article. Short thing off of the sports page as we conclude part one here. Poor reception cause for concern. This is the Illini Champaign. 6 hours ago, Mark Tupper is the executive sports editor for H&R. Champaign, back in March when coaches jotted down players that might impact Illinois' 2015 wide receiver group, Geronimo Allison made the first row of names, as did Mike Dudick, Justin Hardy, and Malik Turner. Those four constituted the cornerstone of a wide receiving group that was going to be the strength of the Illini defense. Illini offense. That list looks radically different now. Dudick tore his ACL in his knee in the spring, and the chance he might actually play this season diminishes by the week. Interim coach Bill Kubitz said Dudick, a freshman All-American, has not yet been cleared for football activities, and after this weekend, one-third of the season is over. So that notes, Middle Tennessee scored 70 points in its season-opening victory over Jackson State and beat Charlotte 73-14 Saturday, making the Blue Raiders the seventh-highest scoring team in the county, 51 points. The other game was a 37-10 loss at Alabama. And of course, they're who the Illini are playing this Saturday at 3 o'clock. Against Charlotte, Middle Tennessee scored five touchdowns in a period of 97 seconds in the first quarter. Kickoff for the Big Ten opener October 3rd against Nebraska has been set for 2:30 p.m. The game at Memorial Stadium will be televised on the Big Ten Network. And this really is the end. Talk to you soon.